number two of Sports 180, remembering the life of Tennessee legend John Majors. And we're pleased to bring on the Stanley Fenton Gates Hotline, the one and only Chris Lowe. Chris, great article, I guess kind of an obituary on ESPN.com that you penned earlier today on Coach Majors. But thanks for joining us. What was it like putting that piece together? I know somebody that you had admired and liked covering during your time.
Well, Heather, thanks for having me on, first of all, to talk about Coach Majors. We're actually working on some more pieces on Coach Majors where we've talked to a bunch of people. The one that's up now at ESPN is just sort of the straight obit. And I've had a chance to talk to several people who coached with and played for him, which is, it's always great to hear stories about him, because there was no better storyteller than Coach Majors. If you ever were fortunate enough to be around him, you hear stories from the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s. I mean, every decade he had you covered. But, he was my coach. He was, when I was in school at Tennessee in the 80s, he was the head football coach there. And I had a chance to get to know Coach Majors very well. A lot of stories, a lot of personal stories. One I'll share with you, in, I guess, 85 or 86, right towards the end of my college career, Tennessee was recruiting a kid from here in Knoxville, Leroy Thompson, great football player. He went on to go to Penn State, but he was interested in communications and the broadcast part of school. So he came over during his visit to visit the student publications office, the Daily Beacon, and some of those things. And they had asked me to sort of be the person. At the time, I can't remember if I was sports editor of the Daily Beacon. I was certainly working there. But they asked me to sort of be the liaison to help explain some of the technology there to him and what we did. I remember there were several coaches with him as he came there in the student publications office. And he was a big-time recruit, big-time recruit. Now, as it turned out, they didn't get him. He went to Penn State. But I'll never forget, even though they didn't get him, Coach Majors wrote me a handwritten note thanking me for my time, and in his words, your loyalty to the University of Tennessee. And I've always thought about that, and that's always been a special. I wish I'd have kept the letter like a dummy. I didn't keep it. But he wrote me a note thanking me for taking the time and being there and doing my part to help the football program. And that's who he was. I talked to Charles Davis the other day. Charles said it best. He said, John Majors was Tennessee, and Tennessee was him. And I remind people this all the time. And it didn't end the way Coach Majors or fans or anybody there wanted it to end. It was a messy divorce. We all know about it. And I don't think now is the time or place to get into all what did or didn't happen. But one thing that's absolutely not for debate is Coach John Majors came back to Tennessee when Tennessee needed him. He won a national championship in 1976 at Pittsburgh and had the talent to win a lot more, and came back to Tennessee when Tennessee was dead in the water and struggling, came back to his alma mater, and it took him a while, but he got him back. And I'll never forget being in New Orleans in 1985. I guess it was 86 when the game was played. I was a junior in college. And of all the Tennessee sporting events I've been around and covered, and there's been a ton of them because I'm just old now, nothing is dear to my heart than that 1985 season, really, and the Sugar Bowl win over Miami, and being there in New Orleans and being in the Superdome and experiencing that. And that was the game, and that was the season, really, that brought Tennessee football back. And I think Tennessee fans everywhere will always be indebted, and that's why Coach Majors has endeared himself to so many people in and around the state.
Chris, that appreciation, that respect for the media, so unique. Can you talk about that a little bit more, even if it's just other things you witness, and how he really got it in terms of what everybody was doing to cover the program and how that benefited the university in the big picture?
Well, I mean, anybody that really had many dealings with Coach Majors, whether you're in the media, whether you're a trainer, a student assistant. He treated everybody you know, sort of the same way. You know, sometimes he'd be gruff with you, but, you know, he would do his best to try to get to know your name. And Coach Majors was so much more than a football coach, Chance. I mean, he loved opera. Every year when he would go up to the National Football Foundation, the College Football Hall of Fame Awards, he would always go to a play in New York City. He'd always tell me about one he saw. And that was terrible. It was terrible. I would go back and some he loved. You know, he'd tell you all about it. But I remember he would call me back when I first got to Tennessee and was covering the program for the Tennessean. And gosh, even before I had a cell phone. And he would leave these long, rambling messages on my answering. And my wife, you know, who's not from Tennessee and didn't grow up in Tennessee, she said, Chris, a Coach Majors called you today and left a long message. And he'd be up in Washington, D.C. with his grandson, Brandon. This was years ago, keep in mind. And he'd give you his whole itinerary. We've been to the Smithsonian Institute. We've been to this museum, that museum. He was such a worldly Renaissance guy. I mean, he loved everything and was much, much more than just your typical, stereotypical football coach, and could talk about anything. And that's what I always admired so much about him. Very much socially active, you know, even before, at a time when, you know, hardly very few football coaches, certainly in the South, were. And he was a guy that if you have any kind of Tennessee blood in you, if it's your alma mater, if you grew up here, if you work here, you know, you're proud to say that that Coach Majors was somebody that was a football coach for as long as he was, and a great player. Let's not forget, he was inducted in the College Football Hall player and should have won the Heisman Trophy. I know that's probably a phrase that Tennessee fans were repeating on multiple fronts forever, from now into eternity. You think about Peyton Manning in 97 and Coach Majors in 56 when he finished second to Paul Hornung. But it's hard to say the Majors name. Period. His dad, his brothers, his whole family, and not have it be just completely and totally intertwined with the entire state of Tennessee, the University of Tennessee, the Tennessee football program.
We're talking to ESPN reporter Chris Lowe, and Chris, we appreciate you joining us today on the life of John Majors. Was Coach Majors ever able to really put into words what it meant to come back to Tennessee after having played such an amazing All-American career at Tennessee and be able to lead the Vols to the Sugar Bowl win, to the three SEC titles, including going back-to-back in 89 and 90? I mean, was he ever really able to convey just what that felt like to him?
Yeah, you know, I talked to him about it some over the years. And again, the way it ended was such a disappointment. And there are a lot of really hurt, bitter, emotional feelings on all sides when that happened. But no, Heather, he told me many times. That's why he came back. He came back because this was his home. You know, the guy, I bet he was 145 pounds soaking wet when he played, maybe 150 pounds, from Huntland, Tennessee. And, you know, to come back to his alma mater and lead him back to national prominence at a time, again, when the school needed him. And let's not forget, I think the year that's probably most underrated during his tenure in Tennessee is 88, because really they started out 0-6 that year. And there are a lot of calls, supporters, fans, media, for Tennessee to make a change. It was time to make a change, and he'd been there for 11 years, and even though they won the Sugar Bowl in 85, that, you know, 87 wasn't a great season. They turned it around that year. This tells you a lot about his resilience and who he was. And won their last five games. That turnaround started a stretch where I think over the next 3.5 seasons they were something like 34-6-2 with two SEC titles. I mean, that's, again, that if you want to know who John Majors was, what he was about, and what coaching at Tennessee meant to him, there you go. Because that really started, that wave started Tennessee on its way, and then let's give Coach Moore a lot of credit. He picked it up and took it to another level. But John Majors left Philip Fulmer a great program. Not a good program, but a great program with a lot of talent. And again, to Coach Fulmer's credit, he took it to another level. But, you know, what he did, and the funny thing is, had he coached in this era, because, you know, his first few years, there wasn't a lot to write home about. 77, 78, 79, 80, 81. They were pretty average most of those years. And in this day and age, I don't know that he would have made it to 85 because everybody wants success right now, yesterday. You know, but he was able to bring in talented players from all over the country. And that's the thing about him. You look at his recruiting classes, and he was able to go all over the country, up to Ohio, out west, up to the northeast, and get great football players, something that Tennessee has always done and continued to do and set the tone. But I, you know, it's cliche to talk about Mount Rushmore's. I mean, we probably do it too much, those of us in the media. But, boy, it's hard to have a Mount Rushmore at University of Tennessee and not have Coach Majors on it.
Chris, what else is important that you want fans to know about Coach Majors that maybe either wasn't appreciated about or you really want to emphasize in your experiences with him?
Well, he was awfully loyal to his players, you know, and his players are loyal to him. I've heard from several of them today. Keith DeLong, Charles Davis, Bruce Wilkerson, guys that played for him right on down through, you know, from when he first got there all the way to the end. And he took pride in, again, Heather, to your question of being back at his school and bringing players that maybe didn't grow up in Tennessee and grew up in different cultures and different parts of the country and indoctrinating them, you know, to the traditions and the pageantry and everything that goes into Tennessee football. And I think that's the thing about him. And just the stories, Vince. My boys were younger then, but we went to a Tennessee baseball game several years ago. We sat out there on the left field porch that they have on the outfield now. Coach Majors showed up that day, and he brought a newspaper, sat down and started reading the newspaper. And I introduced my boys to him, and he started telling stories. He started in the 50s. He went from the 50s to the 60s to the 70s to the 80s. And he ended with that 1980 game. I think the year they played the open season against Georgia and a guy by the name of Herschel Walker. And all these years later, he still talked about a two-point play. Tennessee went for two early in that game and didn't get it. And to this day, he thinks that sort of set the wrong tone in that game. And he said, you know, if I had it to do over again, I never would have done it. And he feels like that's sort of what set the tone for Tennessee not winning that game. But he was a great storyteller. And his mind, I mean, he could remember things from the 50s when he played and the 60s and the 70s. And think about the coaches on his coaching tree, guys. People that coached not only at Tennessee, but Iowa State, coached under him at Pittsburgh. You're talking Jimmy Johnson, John Gruden, David Cutcliffe, Philip Fulmer, Ron Zook. I mean, you can go on and on and on. Kevin Steele, Lovey Smith, King Tree. 33 former assistants that coached under Coach Majors went on to be head coaches, either at the collegiate or pro level. But his coaching tree is as impressive as anybody's out there.
And we were talking about it with Jimmy Himes. Not the easiest guy to work for. Very demanding.
No. A lot of turnover on his staff. Rarely. You go back at Tennessee, Heather, rarely did they bring back staffs intact. You know, he wasn't easy to work for. He'll tell you that. But a lot like Nick Saban. Nick Saban's not easy to work for. I mean, he's had a lot of turnover here more of a modern time on his coaching staff. But typically guys like that, they're always looking to get better. They're always looking to sort of move the needle and tweak this and tweak that. And he could be very difficult to work for. And if you ever had the opportunity to go to one of their practices, he'd stand up there in that coaching tower, Coach Majors would, with that big bullhorn, the megaphone. And you could, half the time you couldn't understand what he was saying because the megaphone, it wasn't real clear. But you knew when he was on your behind. And I remember the players saying, if you saw him come down those circular stairs almost in a sprint and get to the bottom, he'd sort of be out of breath. And if you saw him coming after your position group, you just hung your head because you knew you were about to get it. And typically, it wasn't just the players, but it was the position coach that got it too. And but I could still hear him, attack, attack, attack. I mean, that was sort of his thing over and over again. And so many stories. I could sit here for hours and talk to you about Coach Majors and mm-hmm. And we're just so I was so blessed to have grown up in the era in the SEC when you had coaches like that. You know, Pat Dye, we just lost Pat Dye a few days ago at Auburn. You know, Bear Bryant, John Majors, Vince Dooley. And of course, Spurrier comes to Florida in 1990. But the 70s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, when you look at the lineup of football coaches in the SEC, I mean, you talk about giants. There were tons of giants. And Coach Majors was certainly one of them.
Chris Lowe of ESPN and ESPN.com. Chris, thank you so much. On the way out, though, I want to ask you, what do you think Johnny Majors would have been like coaching in the Twitter era?
Well, first of all, as I said earlier, Heather, he would have been able to talk about a lot more than just football. He would have weighed in on just about everything because he knew a little bit about everything and wasn't uncomfortable talking about everything. So his Twitter account, I would say, would have been pretty interesting. And I don't know that it would have been pretty unfiltered, too. Because in my time of being around Coach Majors and talking to him, you know, he usually said what was on his mind and didn't really care if he stepped on toes.
All right. Thanks so much, Chris. We really appreciate you taking the time today. Thank you.
You bet. It was a pleasure.
That's Chris Lowe of ESPN, ESPN.com.